This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. More babies are born with substance addiction problems in Bexar County than any other Texas county. That's according to the Texas Health and Human Services Commission. This is not a new problem. For every year that the state has collected this data, from 2009 to 2015, Bexar County has topped that list. Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome, or NAS, or NAS, occurs when newborns suffer from symptoms of withdrawal after being exposed to opioid drugs while in the mother's womb. The number of babies with NAS increased 75% nationwide from 2010 to 2015. So why is NAS such a prevalent problem here locally? What's being done to curb this epidemic? What can be done for these infants? What kind of life can they expect? Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from you. We really want to have a community conversation about this. We're going to get real about this. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org. With us to talk about this afternoon, Lisa Cleveland. She is a leader of the Bexar County Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Collaborative, assistant professor at the UT Health San Antonio School of Nursing. Candace Bartlow, she is a mother and a patient partner at the Bexar County Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Collaborative. And Bea Coutois, she is the director of addiction treatment services at the Center for Healthcare Services, and she helped establish the Mommies program with the collaborative. So welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here. Candace Bartlow, thank you for coming here, and I'm going to explore your story in just a little bit first. Let's do some unpacking here about the overall issue. So, Lisa Cleveland, what are you seeing? Tell me about the babies.
So infants who are experiencing neonatal abstinence syndrome, and sometimes you will hear people refer to this as NAS or NAS, really is describes a withdrawal syndrome. And so this can be a variety of symptoms such as a high-pitched cry, difficulty sleeping, difficulty feeding. I think it's really important, though, to clearly state that these babies are not born addicts. They are not addicted. They are born withdrawing from a substance that they were exposed to prenatally, and there is a difference.
Well, explain why that difference is important.
So addiction is much more complex than that. It really incorporates the psychological components that go along with it, and infants don't have that. So infants don't have the craving that often goes along with addiction. They are just born physically withdrawing from that substance.
So the quick question is, what are the long-term problems that these children are going to face?
So NAS actually is a very manageable condition. It's time-limited, typically a couple of weeks we'll see symptoms. As far as long-term outcomes, we really don't have good evidence. We really don't know. And you may recall the crack cocaine epidemic of the 1980s and all of the hysteria surrounding that that really never played out with the infants who were born exposed to cocaine. And so I think we have to be very cautious. We don't have good evidence as to long-term outcomes for these children.
The opioid crisis, well, we're hearing about that all the time, mainly reporting from other parts of the country. I have been told by local public health officials that it's not that bad in Texas, it's not that bad here in San Antonio, and my reply to them is, you need to get out more. Bea Coutois, you're Director of Addiction Treatment Services at the Center for Healthcare Services. How bad is the opioid crisis in San Antonio?
San Antonio has a significant problem. It is a serious problem for the city. I mean, just the mere fact that San Antonio is first, and we beat out, unfortunately, in this case, Dallas and Houston with this problem, I think speaks for itself. So it is a very prevalent problem in this community. And we see it all the time at the Center for Healthcare Services, whether it's on our detox unit, our sobering unit, our medication-assisted treatment program, which is a methadone or Suboxone medication that we dispense for people with opioid substance use disorder diagnosis. In other words, these are individuals that are, for the city of San Antonio, using heroin IV. I know in other parts of the country, it's medication. San Antonio, it is straight up heroin that the residents are using, and they're using intravenously.
So you mentioned the Center for Healthcare Services and the Restoration Center. I was there. I got a story I'm going to put out in a couple of weeks about that. I spent a weekend there and saw many cases come in, people who were addicted to heroin. One case struck me. It was a young kid, maybe in his early 20s, good-looking kid, could look like a college student, could look like anybody, you know, that would have seen on the campus at UT Austin or someplace. He was strung out on heroin. He said he started out, he was a motocross bike rider, hurt his shoulder on a motorbike, you know, doing his due, got prescribed by this doctor painkillers, ended up getting addicted, moved over to street heroin because it was cheaper, easier to get. And so, boom, somebody you wouldn't expect. We're talking about middle class, average, all types of people who are coming down with addicted to heroin.
Correct. All walks of life. Because we're in San Antonio, and I think it's geographically where we're located, it's a lot more readily available to get heroin. And we do see patients at our clinic that started with medication that was prescribed for dental work. That's a common one. Maybe the extraction of their wisdom molars, or moms after they delivered and were prescribed pain medication after if they had surgery. And there, it started from there. So we do see patients from all walks of life that end up, may start with medication and then end up using street heroin because it is so cheap and readily available.
And do we have any kind of numbers of people in San Antonio who are on or addicted to opioids? Do we know how bad it is?
I don't know numbers exactly. What I can tell you is that our clinic is licensed to serve 800 patients, and we pretty much currently are operating close to 700. But there are, I believe, 7 to 8 private methadone clinics, and some of those have up to 800-900 patients. So that kind of gives you an idea. And these are just the patients that are actually enrolled in a treatment program. This is not even addressing those that are out there and still haven't taken that step towards treatment.
It seems like San Antonio and Bexar County and maybe all of Texas is unaware of how bad the opioid problem is and how much it's about to get worse because of the introduction of fentanyl and other designer of synthetic opioids. They're hitting the streets. And have you seen anything like that?
Yes, we have started to see some sprinkling with the fentanyl is what we're starting, which is scary. Because what we have seen with other parts of the country is that once that starts, it takes off like wildfire.
So fentanyl is extremely potent, only takes a few grains of it, and it's incorporated in street heroin. It is a quicker, more intense, a spiky kind of a high, and then it quickly wears off. And people pursue it more vigorously, and they need to have a more demanding addiction when they have that. So that is being introduced in San Antonio, and it is taking grip here, and it's infecting mothers, people who are carrying children or who will be carrying children. And then when the children are born, they are dealing with intense withdrawals. When we come back from this break, we're going to hear the story of one mother who went through this and find out where she is now today. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or comment as we talk about San Antonio's neonatal abstinence syndrome problem, the number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Bexar County has the state's highest number of babies born with drug withdrawal symptoms after being exposed to opioids in the womb. Turn now to Candace Bartlow, a mother and a patient partner with the Bexar County Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Collaborative. And Candace, you yourself went through this process. You were addicted.
Yes, I was.
How did that happen?
I moved to San Antonio a few years back, and I was actually doing really well. I was going to college and everything. I come from a middle upper class family. I was put in school. I was going to college. I had a future ahead of me. I ended up getting hooked up with the wrong people, got addicted to heroin, and just went downhill from there. I went to jail, been to prison, and ended up last year, I found out I was pregnant. And I went to the detox facility to try to get off the drugs. That way, you know, it wouldn't be hard for the baby. When they did the pregnancy test and, you know, did tell me I was pregnant, they told me that they could not detox me because of, you know, complications, you know, with the baby and maybe causing a miscarriage. So they did offer me the help of the methadone. And I really didn't want to do that at first, just from all the negative things I had heard about it. But at that point, I really didn't think that I had any other options. So I went ahead and did go through with the help. And today I'm very happy I did, because I am on methadone and it totally turned my life around. I have a job. I have a place to live. I'm not doing the things I used to do. And it's just, I'm free now. I don't have to worry about it anymore. So
how old's your baby?
My baby is now 8 months.
And the name?
Cassidy.
Cassidy. And so tell me about Cassidy.
Well, she actually was in the NICU for 3 weeks, and she's doing great now. She's a normal, happy baby.
Now, so she was born with the neonatal.
Yes, she was.
NAS. Mm-hmm. What were her symptoms?
Very tight with her, you know, her movement. She was very, very tight. She stretched a lot. Her sleeping wasn't that good. She had high scores. But like I said, it was only for, you know, the couple weeks that she was in there. After she came out, she was she really wasn't showing any signs. So
do you think your story that you were a middle class individual in college, got hooked up with the wrong folks, next thing you know, you're doing heroin, find yourself pregnant, you know, had the baby, how typical is that story?
Honestly, I'm finding out more nowadays that it's very common. It's very common amongst young middle class people, females especially.
Are you able to meet other people who've gone through experiences like yourself?
Yes, I have.
What kind of stories do y'all share?
Just how crazy it is that we found ourselves in those situations.
Trapped.
And that lifestyle, right? Not ever being brought up like that. My parents were never into drugs or anything like that. They didn't bring me up like that.
And so what are most people thinking? What do you think? What's the future look like for you?
Well, you know, I mean, I'm hoping, I mean, as long as I keep on this path, which I do plan to, that I will get somewhere someday, you know, the places I wanted to be before I started doing the drugs.
So having Cassidy in your life.
Yes.
Somebody that you're responsible for and take care of, and that you know that, you know, she's you're her universe.
Right.
Does that change things for you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I almost wonder, you know, if it weren't for her getting pregnant and then being on the methadone, where would I be right now? So.
Right. So there have been some proposals. There was a law that was proposed in the last legislative session that would have put a criminal penalty for women who were addicted and who were pregnant and trying to, you know, put people like that in jail, saying, hey, you're doing something bad to a unborn baby and we need to hold you accountable for that. Do you think a law like that would work, or would it have negative consequences?
Honestly, I don't really know if that's such a positive thing. I mean, I feel like, you know, if the woman wants to get help and change her life, then she has every right to do that.
Right. And other states have tried that kind of a law. And Bicotois, what were the outcomes? I think Tennessee tried a law like that.
Yes. And it backfired. What happened is it clearly showed that women feared. And so they were not accessing the services, and it ended up being a very expensive mistake at the cost of humans' life, because what was happening is that these women were not accessing the care. So the if they're pregnant, then the children, the babies, are born with these type of disorders that could have been prevented if they had accessed care, prenatal care, earlier.
So, Lisa Cleveland, you're the leader of the Bexar County Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Collaborative. As we meet people like Candace and other people, we realize many people ended up being addicted to these drugs, frequently through no fault of their own. Is it important that we offer treatment in a non-judgment kind of a way?
Oh, it's absolutely essential. And there's a lot of good evidence that shows that when women are afraid of being prosecuted, that they will avoid prenatal care. And that is what we definitely do not want to have happen. When women are in treatment, whether they're receiving methadone or buprenorphine and have good nutrition and good prenatal care, their chances of going to full-term delivery and delivering a healthy infant are much greater than if they're afraid to seek that care that they so desperately need.
And Candace, how do you feel about, as you take part of in this collaborative, you're a patient partner of the Bexar County Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Collaborative? I mean, are you giving back here?
I feel like I am because, I mean, I'm basically a proven outcome. I'm the proven outcome of this, and it does work. So if I know if it works for me, then it can work for anybody. Because I reached out for the help, so.
Okay, I want to take a call here. The number is 210-614-8980 as we continue our conversation talking about NAS in Bexar County. Amy is on the line. Amy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Great, go ahead.
Oh, yes. So I really just wanted to ask a question to Candace. I'm really interested in knowing, you know, what her experience was with our healthcare system and just what her experience was like and what can we do as healthcare providers to make her experience better.
Thanks for the call, Amy. Appreciate it. So, Aunt Candace.
My experience with this was very positive. I had a lot of people that were helping me, and I really never had anybody that judged me. So I think that made a big impact of the whole thing, is just not having the support and the non-judgment.
So how did you access care? How did you first take the first step?
I went to the Restoration Center, and I was...
On Flores?
On Frio Street.
On Frio. Right. Frio, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And I got into the methadone clinic, and because I was pregnant, I was put at the top of the list. There was a waiting list, but they put me as top priority because I was pregnant, so...
They do take a lot of walk-ins there. So do you want to talk about that, Bea?
Yes, I'm glad Candace mentioned. The state is very much aware of this issue, and so we have what is designated as priority population with opioid substance use disorder diagnosis. And priority population is any pregnant patient that presents at clinic that is in need of treatment. If there are other patients trying to get into the program, if the patient is pregnant and using intravenously, they bump everyone off the list and they go to the number one slot and they get immediate access to services. And that is because they are pregnant and using IV opioids, which is for San Antonio heroin predominantly.
You're saying that we're seeing a big increase in a number of women who are showing up addicted.
Yes. Right? In our clinic alone, we've been in existence for approximately close to 50 years. And in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, what we've seen is the percentage of women in treatment has gone from 30 to 40%. To 65%. Right now, we have 65% of our population in our medication-assisted treatment program are women. And that is huge shift change.
Lisa Cleveland, this means that this problem is not going to go away. How are you preparing?
So we have been trying to address this issue through the Bexar County NAS Collaborative, or the BCNC is what we're calling it. And the BCNC is a partnership between academic researchers, community stakeholders, such as different health systems, and also our patient and family partners, which really are the core of the BCNC. And this project is being funded by the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute, or PCORI. And so the mission of the collaborative is to support individuals and families impacted by NAS through education, research, and clinical practice. And our goal is really to identify community-driven research priorities that are related to NAS with a focus on outcomes that really matter to families and to the greater community.
So are you going to be able to track the children like that come through the program, and we can learn, you know, what challenges they face and what kind of education outcomes they have, or how is that going to work?
So we have a variety of projects going on right now, not just the BCNC, and that is a goal of several of our projects, is to track these children long term. Really, the goal of the BCNC has not been completely decided yet, and that's, it's a 3-year process of us prioritizing what should be the research, what should be on the agenda for Bexar County, and really our patient partners are driving that with what matters to them, what are the outcomes they want to look at and explore.
So we know from listening to Candace that she was able to switch over to methadone, which is, you know, a way to deal with a heroin addiction, but maybe some, not all moms want to do that. What happens when the mother is still addicted to street heroin and they come in to have a baby, and do they get the baby and go home?
So it really kind of depends on the circumstances. I mean, ideally, even if a woman comes into a hospital and is still actively using heroin, we really try to offer her treatment, whether it's residential treatment or really based on what her needs are. And it just depends on the support system the woman has, if there is a safety plan involved with Child Protective Services. It's really on a case-by-case basis.
So when do you call Child Protective Services?
So actually here in the state of Texas, healthcare providers are not required to contact CPS if mom has a positive drug screen. It's really, you know, based on a case-by-case basis.
Well, I mean, but sometimes you do, right?
Sometimes, yes. If you're concerned that the child is at risk, then yes, we are required to contact CPS.
And you can't tell me what are the red flags that you may think, like, this might be a time to call them?
So if mom is incapable of caring for the infant, if mom is not coming to visit the infant, those would all be clues.
If she's homeless?
Possibly, yes, but we also now have a residential treatment facility.
So you're trying to come up with interventions that may help someone who comes forward and says, I'm addicted to heroin, I'm about to have a baby, and they say, what's your life like? We offer services to you so that at the end of this journey, you know, if you're able to provide some stability, then you can leave with your child and maybe, like Candace, use that child to help you find some ballast in your life and move forward. Is that it?
Yeah, really. So the focus of most of the PCORI type of projects are to conduct comparative effectiveness research. And so that means, does treatment A work better than treatment B? And which one is more desirable to the patient? And so those are kind of the ideas we're right now trying to refine and decide what is our first step? What is the first comparative effectiveness study we want to conduct?
Okay, we're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. We'll take Patty's call when we come back. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is not immune to the national opioid crisis. We are seeing it right here. It is here. It is big. You may not hear about it that often. You may hear about it in other parts of the country, but yeah, San Antonio has an opioid crisis, and it's hitting home with the smallest of victims, infants of mothers who were addicted to heroin or prescription opioids. And these children are, as they're born, they have a very difficult time. It's called neonatal abstinence syndrome. These are infants that are constantly crying. They're not able to sleep well. They're not able to gain weight. They're having sometimes even seizures. But Bexar County is trying to do something about that with the neonatal syndrome collaborative, and we're joined this afternoon by Lisa Cleveland. She's the leader of the Bexar County Neonatal Abstinence Syndrome Collaborative, and also Candace Bartlow. She's a mother and patient who went through the program. B. Cotois is the director of addiction treatment services at the Center for Healthcare Services. Our phone lines are open if you got a question or a comment. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a story to tell, give us a call, 210-614-8980. Patty is on the line. And Patty, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think it's wonderful that y'all brought this matter to our attention. I had some questions as a result of the intro statements. And my biggest question initially was, what are the actual numbers? Do we have a handle on the numbers of people in Bexar County who suffer from this? Based on the response from one of your guests, it sounds like it's somewhere between half and 1% of Bexar County's population. That's just based on, you know, some quick numbers. But we look at that, and then I was startled to hear that 65% of the people seeking treatment are women. We have a 13% diabetes rate in this county, which is outrageous. What I'm curious about is, I understand that there are social and economic pressures that lead people, in some instances, again, this is not a judgment, it's all walks of life, people in all kinds of circumstances who find themselves in these positions. But there are social and economic pressures that affect access to health care, whether it's prenatal health care or whatever. I mean, we have a for-profit health system. So there's I think education is a big component, and not just educating the people who are at these centers, because those people are already reaching out for help. So they've overcome the biggest obstacle to solving the problem. What can we do as a community, perhaps as a nation, to combat the causes of these illnesses, which seems to me, again, to be education. I'd like to listen and take my answer off the air.
All right, Patty, thank you for that call. I appreciate that. So we're seeing, what is it, like 1%, I think one out of 100 babies born are being diagnosed with this here locally. But I also see that Texas only counts NAS cases that are Medicaid-funded deliveries, which means that if you're not using Medicaid, then you don't get counted. So the number could be even higher than that, Lisa Cleveland.
Yeah, it could be higher. What we know that nationally, about 81% of all care for NAS is paid for by Medicaid dollars, by state Medicaid dollars. So we're probably capturing a pretty large number of infants through the Medicaid data. But otherwise, hospitals really are not required to share that data with the state.
And that could be changed with the law?
It probably could be, yeah.
Requiring doctors or hospitals to report this? This would give us a better idea of what's happening with this problem. So, B. Cotois, what are something that people can do to try to address this?
I think it has to do a lot with what the caller just spoke about, education. I think, you know, every opportunity that we have at the center is to go out and do education with the Child Protective Services system, with the legal community, with local OBGYN offices. Anywhere we can have an audience, then it's to provide some education, because this is impacting all across different levels of social economical levels here in this area and nationwide. It's not targeted now like before, where it was only the low income. It's rampant across the board.
It seems like this is not just a singular problem, but this is multiple problems that are intertwined. We know that there's connectivity between opioid use, heroin use, and HIV spreading. San Antonio's got an HIV problem as well. We know that this is another symptom of the problem with the neonatal abstinence syndrome, the little children that we're seeing here, as Bexar County has the highest number of this happening in the state. This should be a red flag showing that we have a problem here in Bexar County. So is the first step, let me ask you, Candace Bartlow, as a mother and patient partner, is recognizing and getting real that this is actually happening here at a level that needs to be addressed.
Of course.
So, I mean, do you think people just still are not fully awake? They haven't woke to the fact that this is going on?
Yes, and then, you know, the other problem is that they're not educated, you know, or they're, you know, a lot of women, they're too scared to ask for help because they feel like they're going to be, you know, disciplined for it or whatever, so...
Okay. Yeah. So how do we deal with that? How do we make sure that people women who are dealing with this, who are in the grips of the problem, they're pregnant, they're addicted, they want some sort of help. Do they not know? How did you know where to go forward?
Well, I mean, I knew to go to the methadone clinic. That's where the restoration center is, where the detox is. So,
and you asked somebody, and that you got some help.
Right.
Was there any frustrating gaps along the way? Like, I'm asking for help. They gave me a pamphlet and told me to talk to somebody, but they didn't really help me.
No, not at all.
So you found very welcoming chain of events that really got you to where you needed to go.
Right.
That's to the credit of your agency, B.
Yes, the center has been pretty proactive in tackling this issue that has been in existence for this city for a number of years now. Unfortunately, this is not a new problem for San Antonio. Heroin has been a problem for a number of years. It's not uncommon for us to see second, third generation patients at our clinic.
Let's go back to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. If you got a question or a comment as we talk about babies born here in Bexar County who are dealing with withdrawal from opioid addiction. They're not addicted, but their mothers were. They came in encounter with this during gestation, and now they're having to deal with this at the age of 1-0. You know, day one, they're dealing with this horrible situation. Let's get Dave on the line. Dave, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I just have a real quick question on your numbers. Are more people coming in addicted to heroin or the opioid prescription kind of addiction?
All right, Dave, thank you.
And I'll hang up. Thanks a lot.
Good question. So, B, can you tell us?
Yeah, for San Antonio, the major substance is heroin. I know in other parts of the country, you hear of the OxyContin, hydrocodone. For San Antonio, we are seeing just straight up black tar, brown heroin. And I think it's geographically where we're located. The drugs are funneled through here. So residents, unfortunately, have easy access to this illegal substance.
So, Candace Bartlow, were you using black tar heroin or China White, or
I was using, of course, it's all cut after, you know, once you get a hold of it, but it was formed as black tar heroin.
So, yes. Little balloons of it?
Right.
Okay, and like you just buy it on the street, $15 a balloon?
$25 a gram.
So, very easy for anyone who wants to get it, it's out there.
Right, very easy.
How hard was it for you to find it?
Not hard at all.
Just go someplace where the nefarious people look nefarious.
Right.
Okay. And so, Lisa Cleveland, you know, this information, how is that helpful to you?
Well, I think it's very helpful. You know, a lot of the women that we work with have told us that, you know, in certain neighborhoods, you can go to any street corner and purchase heroin. So it's out there. And ignoring it and pretending that it will go away is not the right way to approach that. And that really is the goal of the Bexar County NAS Collaborative. And we do have a website now that will allow the community to interact with us and provide feedback to us. The website address is keepingfamiliestogether.org. It's all one word. We are up and fully functional now and really encourage the community's input. We will also be holding two large community meetings, one in late fall and one in the early spring. And we really welcome the community to come and participate in those meetings with us and provide their feedback.
We've done some programs about the maternal mortality problem that we have in Bexar County, another terrible stat for us. And we know that this is a place that we have a lot of mothers who die. And one of the leading causes is overdose.
Yes. So, as many people know, Texas has the highest maternal mortality rate in the country and the second leading cause of death. And so by maternal, I mean anytime during pregnancy or within 365 days of the end of a pregnancy. And that really is the CDC's definition. But what we know is that here in Texas, the leading cause of maternal mortality is overdose death. And typically that involves an opioid. And so we are currently conducting another study called the Maternal Opioid Morbidity Study, where where we really want to talk with women and family members who have experienced either relapse or somebody in their family has overdosed to try to find out what are the contextual factors around this. So we have these numbers, but we have no idea what's going on.
Right. We need to know. We need personal experience, firsthand knowledge. What was it like to be in this problem? How did you find yourself in it? Maybe you got yourself out of it. Your information could be valuable to these studies, these programs. Also here on the air, you can help us as well by giving us a call, telling us your story. We could learn from your experience. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you or someone that you love relapsed or overdosed during on opioids during or after a pregnancy? There is a maternal opioid morbidity study going on. Opioid drugs that includes heroin, Vicodin, OxyContin, methadone. The UT Health Science Center is conducting a research study to understand the circumstances surrounding maternal opioid use, relapse, and overdose during pregnancy and up to 1 year after the birth of a child. Participants will engage in any small group conversations. There could be some compensation for their time, but you know your information is going to be valuable. It will help other people. And here's a number to call. You can contact Ashley at 210-450-8161, and that's a way that you can help deal with this opioid problem that we have here in San Antonio and is hitting particularly hard with women in our community. And then when the women get pregnant with their infants, we're talking about our neonatal with the abstinence syndrome problem that we have here in Bexar County. The number to call is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980 to join our conversation. And as you were telling us, Bea, that this is not a new problem, that this has been going on, and that actually people see San Antonio as an area of expertise on how to deal with this. So we're conducting many, we're a model for other communities.
We are. The Center for Healthcare Services has the Mommies program, which is a intensive specialized female program for women that have any substance use disorder diagnosis, but it started off with opioid substance use disorder. And that program has become a state model, and it has been duplicated throughout the state. There are now Mommies programs in Dallas, Houston, Corpus Christi, and areas that have been hit by this epidemic. And then also San Antonio has the opportunity, and we have the first residential program that targets women that are pregnant or parenting that have the opioid substance use disorder diagnosis. And it's a residential program. The women can stay there anywhere from 3 months up to 6-9 months. And it's a small program that takes women from anywhere throughout the state of Texas. It's 12 beds, and 3 of those beds are assigned or allocated for women that take their children or deliver and are equipped with a crib, and they can stay there as long as needed while they are participating in residential substance abuse treatment services.
Got a call from Jeannie. Jeannie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
For Candace, I'd just like to commend her for taking the step or stepping up and really having the courage to accept the help that was extended to her. But I also have a question because she did touch on the subject of judgmental help or creating a non-judgmental environment for these women and individuals who are struggling this way. How do we learn to communicate? Are there resources for people who may suspect that a loved one or a friend may be suffering with this addiction? And how do we, in a non-judgmental way, identify the problem so that then it can be addressed and they can start to seek some support?
Well, that's a good question, and that's why I'm part of this NAS collaborative, because that's basically what we're going for, is just letting women know that they can come up front and ask for help. So,
okay. Another caller, Christina. And Christina, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering,
What message does Candace have for women in this situation?
Basically, just think about the long term, you know, not just about the short term, not just today or tomorrow, but long term. And, you know, if you get the help now, what good is it going to do for you, you know, in the long run? And remember, you know, you have to think about a baby. It's not just about you at this point. It's about the baby that you're bearing.
And Lisa Cleveland, can you take a look at, you know, the long term for society overall? We widen the scope out, and why is it beneficial to provide these services to these moms and infants?
It's absolutely essential because, you know, moms and babies belong together, and our team really does study moms and babies as a dyad because they do go together. And if we're talking about having generations of families where children are being raised in foster care, that is not something that we want to have happen. We really want to try to keep families together and try to break this from becoming one generation after another.
Why is it important that moms participate in the care of their own children in the neonatal abstinence syndrome clinic?
So when it comes to management of NAS, really the first line of management is what we call non-pharmacologic management. And these are things like holding. We're right now conducting a study at University Hospital where we are putting babies in kangaroo mother care, which is a method of skin-to-skin holding that's been done quite a bit with preterm infants, showing much improved outcomes for that particular population. What we're seeing with the women who participate in the study at University Hospital is that when they put their infants skin-to-skin, many of the symptoms that we're seeing, so the fussiness, the inability to sleep, really go away. And it's been very meaningful for the mothers who have participated. And it's the infants just seem to do much better.
And Candace, did you do that?
Yes, I did.
What was that like?
Oh, it was wonderful because being that my daughter was in the NICU and that time that I was there to be with her was so special to me, just having that bonding moment of having her skin to skin, knowing that it calms her and it's soothing for her, did make me feel a lot better.
Are you able to nurse your child?
In the hospital, I chose not to, just because of, you know, she was in the NICU and the just the area I was in, but I knew that she was taken care of.
Lisa, how does that go?
So women who are stable on either methadone or buprenorphine, which is a type of medication-assisted treatment, the current recommendation is that they can breastfeed, and it's really encouraged that they do breastfeed. Breast milk can help reduce some of the symptoms of NAS. Even mothers who are hepatitis C positive under many circumstances can still breastfeed, so it's highly encouraged, and it's also something that many people don't know. They're not aware of that.
So hepatitis C positive is an important factor here. I don't know, B, can you help me with that? Because I know that treatment is very expensive, but they do provide treatment free for some people who...
Yes, we work pretty closely with the Liver Institute, and they help facilitate treatment, which can be very expensive at no cost to these patients. So that is a huge benefit. And they come in and do trainings with our staff. And so we work very closely, our nursing staff, when necessary, which, I mean, with this population, we have about 90+% that are Hep C positive. So we try to link to that resource as quickly as possible.
So we've made great strides in beating hepatitis C. The treatment is out there. We just got to get it in the hands of the people who need it. And if we don't, you know, it's just going to keep spreading and the problem will get worse. So we have to identify what is out there. And so Candace Bartlett, talk about your involvement. I mean, you coming forward, talking about your experiences really is invaluable. Talk about what that means to you.
Right. Well, what it means to me is basically, like I said, you know, being a part of this NAS collaborative, being able to put my input in because, you know, I was the one that experienced it, and being able to work with these people that are so supportive and have so much knowledge of it really does make a difference. And it also does bring knowledge to other women and to be able to maybe bring them to us to help them and end this for them.
So you're in methadone now.
Right.
What are your plans for that?
Well, right now I'm actually going down on my dose slowly but surely.
Wow, that's hard.
Actually, it really isn't that hard. I'm at a slow dose, so I go down about a milligram every couple weeks. And I haven't seen anything negative about it. I mean, I haven't had any symptoms of withdrawal. So, you know, as long as you do it at the right pace, it's okay.
And counseling come along with that?
Oh, of course, yes. And I have a great counselor.
And so you think you'll be able to be off methadone? Or?
Yes. I mean, you know, time will tell exactly when that day will be, but I will be off methadone.
So I was under the impression that you had to go to the clinic to get it, but you can actually be...
I do get a few take-homes a week, so I don't have to go every single day.
And I think that's a hassle that actually is people are afraid of. You know, they may be addicted, but they don't want to get on methadone because they don't want to have to go to that nasty clinic.
Well, this is how I feel. They went to the dealer every day to get what they got. So, you know, if you would go through sleet, snow, rain to go get your stuff, then it's not really that much harder to go to the clinic to get your medicine.
But so that drive to get the stuff and even the worst conditions, that's what's also driving women
exactly.
who keep being users when they know that they could be pregnant or could be getting pregnant soon. And so they have to weigh all that and they have this, their brain has been hijacked, right?
Right.
Is that what it feels like?
Oh, of course.
And so advice to these women.
Is just if you are pregnant, even if you're not pregnant, you know, there's many places that will help you get off of the drug. You know, methadone has helped me. It's changed my life. So there is a solution to this.
And Lisa Cleveland, you're sitting next to Candace. What do you think?
Oh, my advice is to absolutely seek treatment. There is hope. Candace and several of the other moms that work with the collaborative are proof of that. They're making great contributions to society, and they're keeping their children. They're raising their own children, and that makes a huge difference.
And Bicotois, unfortunately, we're not seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, the tunnel seems to be getting longer. We're facing a more serious epidemic here.
Yes. On the positive side, though, there are, as Candace and Lisa just mentioned, plenty of resources available. And our hope is that opportunities such as this, where we are able to get the word out so that people can come forward and not fear the judgment, the stigma, and are able to access the services that they need that can help them achieve recovery.
And how can people get help? Call you?
They can contact the Center for Healthcare Services at 261-1300.
And Cassidy is your child. How's she doing? Great.
She's doing great.
And you're with her all the time?
Well, I'm actually in the process of getting her back, but she'll be home in July, and I do get to see her during the week.
That's
so,
pretty awesome.
Yes.
Well, Candace Bartlett, thank you so much for joining us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.